770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Coming into the last half hour, if you want to call in and talk, we'll be glad to talk. Let's see if we got, how many topics have we had today? We kind of run the gamut. We talked a lot about COVID. We talked a lot about COVID policies, vaccine mandates. We talked about UAB making a decision to recant on their policy of requiring vaccine mandates for their employees. That's going to be interesting. And that was a win by the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty, my friend Matt Clark. We also talked about issues related to several breaking news stories. One was that. Another one we talked about was the fact that the Pentagon has just announced, and it's top-of-the-line breaking news story this afternoon, that the drone strike that the President of the United States and the Pentagon had previously said was what General Milley called in a press conference on September 1st a righteous strike, they've now admitted, no, it does appear that all we did was kill some civilians. Well, that's a big deal. And I wonder how it is that the President of the United States was able to go to the podium and make the statements he did when apparently they had no clue who they had hit. No clue whatsoever. That boggles my mind. And then on top of that, we got another issue. So just today, another breaking news story that I gave you on the air was the fact that the FDA, their advisory panel has come out, whereas President Biden said in a speech most recently that he was pushing for boosters, and I believe the policy was that starting next week they were going to start making booster shots available nationwide, that the FDA has today rejected boosters for the majority of the population. Now, there's an official vote still to come. It's not final, but it's their advisory panel saying that with the exception of ages 65 and up, that we do not recommend boosters. That's huge. That also means that, once again, the administration got way out ahead of itself and made announcements that it couldn't keep up with. Then we have this. This also just broke, literally in the last hour. I've recognized that France has been aggravated, and I'm trying to figure out why. France has been aggravated because just the other day, a surprise announcement came out that said the United States had entered into an agreement with Australia and Great Britain, and it involved making available nuclear submarine technology, and for that matter, nuclear submarines, to Australia as a counterbalance to China in the Pacific. Okay, I get that. I'm trying to figure out, why is France so beat up about this? Well, it just came out just now. It's because France had already had a prior agreement with Australia that would have sent French-made nuclear submarines to Australia. I'm sure it was a big-money contract, and France now feels like they have been snubbed and stabbed in the back by one of their major groups of allies. And so France today has recalled its ambassadors to the United States and Australia in response to this new pact signed by the countries along with the United Kingdom. France is one of our major allies. For all their warts and blemishes and the differences of opinion sometimes, at the same time, they are part of NATO and they are a part of our European ally structure. And President Macron is ticked off. And when a country recalls its ambassador, that's basically like, you know, throwing down the gauntlet. That's the State Department version of a slap in the face. And so now France is ticked off. So here we are. We're on Friday afternoon, right? It is 4:39 p.m. on the 17th of September, and we're looking at a situation where we have a U.S. drone strike massacre confession. We have a White House booster plan that was firmly rejected by the FDA. We have a close European Union ally recalling its ambassadors to D.C. over a perceived snub. We have all of this happening in one day. And then what's happening with the President of the United States? He's headed to the beach in Delaware. I just went ahead and checked to make sure that was really correct, but I did. I went to the White House website, checked on the president's travel itinerary. He is staying at the Rehoboth or something like that hotel at the beachfront in Delaware. How many times does he need to go to Delaware on the weekends? Is it that hard living in the White House? And folks, that's a clear indication that what we have right now is leadership that has no idea how to lead. And so with everything going to hell in a handbasket, every single policy... Oh, and then I also broke the story about all the things that are happening on the southern border. And I even played the clips on that about the fact that the FDA was trying to block aerial photographs of this 11,000-strong group of immigrants that are camped out under a bridge at Del Rio, Texas. Add that one to the text. So people, this is a mess. I mean, at that point, you've got immigration policy falling apart. You've got COVID policy falling apart. You've got military policy and foreign policy falling apart. And the president's going to the beach. I do not get it. Who are his advisors? Or maybe they just want him out of the way. Maybe it's better off that he's not there. So the adults in the room can... Wait, Charlene just sent me a text. I said the adults in the room right as her text came in, and her text says, but it's so good now that an adult is finally in control. Yes. Yes, honey, you nailed it. I mean, the mean orange man is no longer sending out mean tweets, but yet the old beta male is taking his 19th vacation this weekend at the beach while Rome is burning. And yeah, my wife, politically astute, once again nails it. Well, listen, folks, it is like every single day that this is going on, and it's amazing to watch. But truthfully, we've got to start thinking about the ramifications of these actions. So listen, since the phones aren't ringing at this particular moment, I do want to jump back to a topic that I had prepared to talk about a little more. Copper, go ahead and get clip 7 ready. We're gonna talk for a second. So, you know, part of what we got this mess of this foreign policy, State Department, military policy, Pentagon, all of it policy, White House. Part of the debacle that we've got in Afghanistan, because I am not going to let that go. It does not need to go away. Is that it has second, third order, and fifth order effects, for that matter, that are amazing. One of which is the impact on women. I mean, I've got a story right here. I'm holding it in my hands. Paper. And the paper, the story that I've got right now came off of Breitbart yesterday afternoon. Afghan female youth soccer team escapes to Pakistan. And the story talks about the plight of girls and women living under Taliban rule and Sharia law. That literally, the senior team, not the junior team, they couldn't get out, but the senior team, working with an international charity called Football for Peace, was able to lobby Pakistan and be allowed to get out. 81 of them, 81 people. It's family members, players, all of them were able to get out to Pakistan because what they recognize is that living under Taliban rule is something that is so onerous for females in that country. And so these policies that were put into effect that have allowed the Taliban to walk back into power are literally putting women at risk. In fact, let's go to a report. Trey Yankst from Fox News, clip 7, Copper. Go ahead and play it.
Did you ask them about women and how they react and treat them? And if so, did they answer it?
We didn't talk to these fighters about women, but we spoke with the Taliban spokesperson in Doha a few weeks ago. And basically, the group claims they are going to respect the rights of women, allow them to study at university, and allow them to basically take part in society. But the reality on the ground when you're walking through the streets of Kabul is quite different. There are very few women on the streets here. Those you do see are either wearing a hijab or a burqa, and their place in society is not equal. The Taliban spokesperson we talked to claimed that they would be equal, but when you are here in Afghanistan, you see that women are considered second-class citizens here. And those Taliban fighters, they're very focused on maintaining security, but human rights and equality is very low on the list for this group.
Also fascinating, and more Daniel. To come on that. Thank you so much, Trey Ying.
All right, thank you for that. By the way, I know the phones were ringing, but we had a clip playing. We couldn't get to it right then. But folks, listen, if you want to call in, 866-494-9866. If you just tried a moment ago, go ahead and try again now. But here's the bottom line. Policies have an effect. Policies have an effect. And what we're seeing right now is that the effects of the Biden administration's Afghanistan policy is creating a human rights disaster in the country of Afghanistan. Now, I was there, and I know you've heard me say I was there, and one of the things that just really struck me, I can still remember seeing things that indicated that even after the Taliban fell at the initial onset of the war when I was there, that it was still rough going for women. I lived in what would be considered an old world area of the country, and it was amazing to see the burqas still on, and these aren't normal, these aren't hijabs, by the way. These are burqas, which cover the entire body, and all you have is a little bit of a net, a mesh, if you will, over the face so that the women can see where they're walking. They can be beaten if their ankles show, because that's considered too revealing. And so this Afghan soccer team that I talked about a moment ago, they fled because, literally, in the quote that I've got at the end, Taliban reporters said that it is likely that their face and bodies would not be fully covered, and Islam does not allow women to be seen like this. That's amazing. All right, I got a call on line 5, I think it is. Nicholas from Huntsville. Hey, Nicholas, Phil Williams from Right Side Radio. What's on your mind, man?
Hey, man, you said something earlier in the show that kind of hit me a little bit. You said that every election from here on out matters, all the way down to who your commissioner is or who your constable is. If it gets to the point to where these elections seem like they are frauded all the way down to the lowest of levels, at what point would the American people have to decide whether to take a step back and consider, you know, I hate to say it this way, but use force to gain our country back? Because I know that's been a lot on a lot of everybody's minds with the January 6th. They call it the insurrection, which it wasn't to me in my eyes. But at what point do the American people take that stance?
Well, and so I'll be honest with you, Nicholas, thanks for the call, but I don't have a stance that would say, hey, I advocate for violence to overthrow an election. I don't. I thought the January 6th thing, while it wasn't an insurrection, it did not qualify as a true insurrection. I thought it was also a huge mistake, and it put us on level there for a few minutes with Antifa, and that did not need to happen. What I do believe needs to happen, though, is there's going to have to be a level of social disobedience. Things like vaccine mandates, if you don't agree with it, then you're going to have to find a way to stand your ground. And if there's things like shutting down your business in a pandemic and you believe that's wrong, there are going to be times where social disobedience, where you're going to have to stand your ground. There's always going to be opportunities that are legal and that don't require violence that I believe are always, always, always the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth choice. And I do not foresee any attempts, reasonable attempts at violence that would be beneficial to any degree. But I also do believe, though, that social disobedience and the ability to have vivid debate and the opportunity for finding every platform available, like radio and online, and then, by the way, go run for office. And if you don't trust the election process, well, by God, what are you doing on election day? Because I'll be honest with you, one of the things that we do have, Alabama does a great job with running its elections smoothly. But if you don't like the way it's being running, you need to be a poll watcher. Because every single election, every one, we have people that are called poll watchers whose job it is as volunteers to just stand there that day and watch and make sure things go okay. And we have them at every polling site. But they're always hurting for people. And the Democrats are real good in some places about having lots of their own poll watchers. And we need to make sure that as conservatives, we have people volunteering to be poll watchers and poll workers and be there on those days. Watch the process. Don't get on social media and complain about it later if you didn't bother helping with it then. Hey, thanks for the call, Nicholas. We appreciate you being in the audience. I got another caller here on line 1, Rita from Huntsville. Hey, Rita, Phil Williams on Right Side. How are you today?
I'm great. I hope you're doing good. I love your show.
I appreciate it, and I thank you very much for being in the audience with us. You've called before, I believe, but what's on your mind today?
Yes. The southern border.
Oh.
My concern, among other things, is what's going to happen the end of this year when we've got millions of people coming in and we don't have all the food to feed?
Well,
I really think there's going to be a food shortage.
Well, you're not the only one who thinks that, Rita. And there are some who are, you know, preparing in advance, and I don't mean like prepping, but just preparing in advance.
Right.
But you're already seeing we're at 5.3% inflation. You've got some products that are hard to find on the shelves, and that includes building materials. Rita, I got to go to a break. I hate it, but thank you for the call. That was a classic example of the fact that the socialized aspects of taking care of illegal immigrants means you have to find ways to support them with government entitlements too often. and that's going to create additional strains on the system, sort of like what she was referencing right there with her food. All right, folks. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back to wrap it up. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Oh, yeah, solid conservative and just plain right. And, man, it has been some more kind of a full day. Copper, how many breaking news stories did we have?
Four
at least? Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do we have? We had FDA denial of the Biden administration's booster plan, mm-hmm. right? Or at least their advisory panel did. We had Pentagon having to admit that they really killed civilians, despite the fact that they had already lied to us once that they knew absolutely it was ISIS-K, ISIS-K. All right, that's not. And then number three, we had UAB recanted its policy on vaccine mandates. That happened on the air with today. And then, technically, we kind of had four. We had sort of a breaking story. Oh, no, I take it back. France pulled back its ambassador. To Australia and to the U.S. because it feels like it's been snubbed on foreign policy and defense policy issues. That's four. And then we had Representative Connie Rowe was on with us, who let us know on the air that the governor had just sent a letter to all legislators announcing there will be a special session on prisons coming up at the end of this month. That's five. And technically, not quite breaking, but close to breaking, Connie Rowe talked about her new position being the senior advisor to the lieutenant governor. Six, if you want to count that as six.
Did you mention the border crisis?
This many. Do what?
What about the border crisis?
Lord God, and then there's a border crisis. What? And then I guess, so that's seven. And then if you get down to it, Copper, number eight is, in spite of all of that, President Biden's going to the beach for the weekend.
Yeah.
God bless him. He must need his rest. It's hard. It's hard getting so many things wrong at one time.
Yeah, he can rest when we vote him out of office, which will be soon.
One would hope. Right now, we're looking at a little over 3 years. 3 years.
It'll be soon.
I look at it and think, okay, if I could see Kamala Harris doing anything right now, I would think she was trying to show herself as presidential. But apparently what she's doing is hiding because she does not want to be seen as being affiliated. That's what I'm seeing. I don't know. Preserving her ability to deny any knowledge. It's not going to work, though, Vice President Harris. It's just not going to work. Folks, such a full week. I hope also, too, that you have caught the fact that every day this week I have done my right side way, my monologue that I open the show with, on a different aspect of why I believe I'm a conservative. And I did that for my benefit in part because I need to be able to verbalize these things. But I also did it for your benefit. I hope that you see that we have to be able to tell the world why we believe what we believe. It's so important that we don't just shake our fist in the air and say, because I'm a conservative, that's why. We've got to be able to say what that means. And the different aspects of that were included in every one of my monologues this week. And there's even more. And who knows, I might do some more next week. But all said and done, you stay the course. You stay on top of it. Because we also had some victory stories this week, and right now what we're seeing is that these liberal policies, these government overreaches, these things that are not solid conservative and just plain right, well, they're falling apart because conservatives are willing to say something about it. Now, you have a great weekend. Coming up next, you got the great one, Mark Levin. I'm Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. I'll see you soon. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.